and we're Moser Nefesh, fighting for us and defending our ability to live here in Eretz Israel. We wanted to invite some of the parents to come to speak about their children and to have Rav Targum give a shiur. Several parents initially said yes, and then they had scheduling conflicts and decided not to come, but they all expressed their deep appreciation for us, people that did not know their children, coming together to learn the their children and to perpetuate their memory through Torah. And I was thinking about what we do here on Sunday mornings, which is have a community-wide Ilun Shir, and wanting to do that, we Ilun Nishmas some of the soldiers who were unfortunately killed. There's really nobody better than what I thought we could invite to give an Ilun Shir and discuss also some of the Kalalim than Rav Moshe Targum. Rav Moshe Targum is a rabbi for many of us here. Even those of us that didn't learn Yeshivat HaRetzion are connected to the Torah of Yeshivat HaRetzion, which Rav Targum represents. He's a Talmid Chacham, his integrity is impeccable, his midos tovos, his refinement is unbelievable. And I think he's somebody who could speak to both sides of this, both give an hour-long Iyun Shir with 32 Makaros, the extra two were sent at 12 o'clock last night, obviously very important for this year, and also speak a little bit about some of his Talmidim who unfortunately fell in battle. Without further ado, Rav Targum.
Okay. Yashkoach Rabbi Yosef, and Yashkoach not just for the introduction, but for teaching Torah, being Marbitz Torah the entire year long, and a real titchachu in this building. I'll talk maybe a little bit later about how to orient a communal attitude towards starting a new project, because in some ways it does tie into what we're experiencing now together and what we're experiencing in yeshiva. Can you hear me in the back? Okay, I'll try to project. I'll actually move the shtender up a little bit. Okay, just make it a little bit easier. Okay, so let's first start with the Lamdashah part. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about the boys. The halachas of chametz are unique as opposed to all the other isurim in the Torah. There are three tiers of isurim. Most things that are asur b'achila, some that are asur b'achila, not just asur b'achila, but asur b'hana. And there's only one element that's not only asur b'achila uvehana, but it's also asur to hold and to own. Everything else that you're not allowed to own is only takana d'rabanan, schar for the nazir, you shouldn't have wine in your cabinet because it may come to violate, but there's no iser min hatara to own anything that's aser to eat or to get hana. Kadosh Baruch Hu trusts us. If it's aser, it's aser. So you're allowed to own it, you're allowed to maintain it, you can't sell it because that would be a form of hana. Regarding chametz, there's a specific iser of valyura valyumatze. And when Mirtz Hashem today, we'll try to wrap our heads around the nature of that iser of valyura valyumatze. So Rav Aaron always taught us to read Sukkim carefully before running to the Makaros, running to the Rishonim, and that's very tantalizing. You want to get to the juicy part, but there are two Psukim in the Torah which describe Bayura Bayimatze, and there are, and I'm using that term together, we may question whether that term is really conflated as I'm describing it, and there are three differences between the way the Isurim are presented in the Pasuk. I presented the Psukim out of order, just because of the way the Gemara addresses them. Source number one is from Yud Gimel, source number two is from Yud Beis, but essentially they're both in Parshas Bo. So for our purposes, it's the Psukim in Bo. Matzah Siyachel Shiva Seyamim, source number one, L'Reel Chachamitz Reel Chasabachol Gvulecha. We know these Psukim well, they appear in the Parshas of the Tefillin. The second Pasuk in Parak Yud Beis is a little less familiar to us, Shiva Seyamim Soleim Matzah Bevatechem, Kechal Ocha Mechmetzes. There are multiple differences between the psukim. The ones we're going to focus on today. Remember, chametz appears in the second pasuk, matzah appears in the second pasuk, which is the first pasuk, not the second pasuk. When I say first and second, I mean the psukim that are on this makaro sheet. But the differences regarding bayra bayamatzah, there are three differences. One is the difference in legal ownership. Two is the difference in location. Three is the difference in visibility. Those are the three differences in the psukim. Whereas the first pasuk uses the word lacha to describe the chametz which you're not allowed to own, which connotes or implies legal ownership. Le'ira lacha chametz, we know what lacha is. The second pasuk omits the word lacha. The word lacha is completely absent from the second pasuk. So le'imatzei bevatechem. So it's not like there's a difference. There's a difference by omission. Le'ira lacha as opposed to le'imatzei without the phrase lacha. And that's the difference the Gemara is going to initially try to analyze. The second difference is where the chametz is. In the first pasuk, b'chol gevulcha, meaning anywhere you own. It could be your shed, it could be your storage house, it could be your summer home, it could be your forest that you own. Whereas the second pasuk says, shivas yamim soleim matzei bivatechem, in your house. The third chilek between the psukim is, does there need to be some visual contact between the chametz, at least the way the psukim describe it, and the person. The first pasuk describes lo yira lecha, which would imply some degree of visibility. The third pasuk says, "Lo'imatzeh," even if it's invisible. As I mentioned before, the first chilek is the chilek the Gemara is most aware of. That's the chilek the Gemara is going to expound upon, but we'll see some Rishonim picked up on the secondary chilukim as well, not just the legal ownership or lack of legal ownership, but the location of the chametz, bayis versus gavul, as well as whether there's an optic element to chametz, le'ira lecha, or as long as it's there, le'imatzeh lecha chametz. Okay? Now, here we have a rare, rare treat where Chazal themselves presented the Chakir. Normally, to get to the question, you have to dig in Rishonim and align Nafkaminos and try to reverse engineer, and based on this Nafkamina, how did he view it? Based on that Nafkamina, how did he view it? Here, Chazal felt this was such a halachic enigma, they themselves put the issue on the table. It's a very famous Gemara, it appears in Psachim Davav and Bava Kama Dav Chavtes. There are two anomalies. There are two areas in halacha, which you can't really own the object based on legal paradigmatic ownership. And yet, you're treated like an owner. And this is Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Elazar, it's not clear, Rabbi Yochanan, the Gemara says different shitos, quotes it down, Rabbi Elazar, our Gemara quotes it, we'll start with source 4. Shnei divarim einam b'shusa shel adam. There are two objects in halacha which don't classically conform to ownership. One is chametz. Why can't you not own chametz? Because it's asur bana. And utility is crucial to ownership in halacha. Anything which is asur bana, if you don't have utility, you can't really own it. The Gemara says, "Imsachim davzayin mekadesh isha mishay shalos and lamayla bechita kor danasiyin mekudeshes." You can't be mekadesh a woman for that matter, sell it or anything else with chametz, because if you don't have utility, because it's asur bana, you don't own it, and yet you're treated like an owner because you violate bayir abayimatzeh. It's a halacha conundrum. On the one hand, you can't own it. On the other hand, you're treated like you do own it. Or to say it differently, the isra na and the halacha bayir abayimatzeh clash. Isra na suggests you don't own it. Bayir abayimatzeh suggests you do own it. That's a halacha clash. Another halacha clash is bor b'shus harabim. A bor you can't own for two reasons. A, because it's in b'shus harabim. Because it's a hole. You can't really own a space. You can't own air. The key issue is b'shus harabim. So, and yet you're treated like an owner. You're liable for damages in the bor. So Rabbi Elazar said, different deus we said it, but the Gemara in Sachem quotes Rabbi Elazar, shnei divarim einam b'shus shel adam, v'yasan akasav, and here's the most important letter in all of Shas, ki'ilu hein b'shuso. Even though you don't legally own them, you're treated like an owner. Ki'ilu hein b'shuso. Anytime you have a kaf, it's called a kaf adimayon, it could be a strong or a weak kaf. So, for example, the famous Machlokas Rashi tells us in Brachos, whether during your Shmon Esrei, if you daven a long Shmon Esrei, and the tzibur is up to Kaddish or Kedusha, should you be quiet and listen to the Kaddish or Kedusha, midin shomea keona? So if you hold shomea keona, mamish, that listening is like saying it, you shouldn't, because it's a hefsek in your Shmon Esrei. If my listening to the Yesh Meir Abba and being mischad in Latzeis is like I'm saying, it's a hefsek in my Shmon Esrei. If shomea keona is a loose cuff, it's not really like I'm saying it, it's a yadzis through shmea, as if I had said it. It's a functional analogy rather than identity. You're not identifying to as being identical. So in that case, I'm not being mafsik mashmon esrei. I'm not saying anything. I'm listening. Listening is a form of being yotze, a form of communication. I'm yotze. Anytime you have a kaf kochel kagufel, anytime you have that kaf, you want to gauge how strong the kaf is creating an association. So here it's not really a kaf. It's even more elaborate. Ki'ilu hein v'shisa. Does this halacha mean that the Rabbeinu Shalom said, you're right, these are two outliers. They don't conform to the normal expectations and guidelines of ownership. But you know what? You own them. And since you own the bar, you're liable. And since you own the chametz, you violate by Rabbi Matzah. Is that what the Kilo B'Shuso connotes? Or Kilo B'Shuso means that even though you can't own a bar, you're still liable. If there's some other track, we're learning about Bava Kama and Yeshiva, but there's some other track that you can be liable for bar, even though you don't own it. Normally, for Shein, Regal, Eish, you have to own it. Maybe not Eish, but for bar, you can be chayiv even though you don't own it. The same thing with chametz, which is our topic. When the Torah says, when the Gemara says, Kilu hein b'shuso, it doesn't mean that Hashem endows you with atypical ownership, and therefore, Yechai b'ayir b'ayir matzeh, the lach is that b'ayir b'ayir matzeh isn't really a function of ownership. You don't own chametz, you can't own chametz, it's asur bana, but the fact that you're somehow associated with the chametz, connected to the chametz, involved in the chametz, means that you violate b'ayir b'ayir matzeh, even though you don't own it. Said otherwise, said in more lamdasha terms, is b'ayir b'ayir matzeh a chiddush in b'ayilus, or is it a chiddush in b'ayir b'ayir matzeh? Is the chiddush by Rabbi Matzah, even though you don't typically own something which you can't use, here the Torah endows you with atypical ownership? Or it's a chiddush by Rabbi Matzah, it's not a function of ownership, it's a function of some association, even in a non-legal sense. That's the question we're going to tackle today. As I mentioned to you, it's a very, very atypical Gemara because the Gemara itself presents the question. This is a very transparent Gemara. You read the Gemara and you see the question. Chazal obviously intended this question. They obviously used language that's ambiguous enough to invite both readings, and they wanted to sustain both readings, and different Rishonim took different readings. The truth is that this ambiguous cuff appears in a later story, which maybe we'll reference later, In this case, we actually have an example of Bayi Rabbi Yamatze, which we're going to amplify, but let's just talk about it now for a moment. Rava told the people in his town, Mechoza, that the food that they were obligated to bake for the armies, which is part of the Persian laws, that they are going to violate Bayi Rabbi Yamatze, even though they don't own the food, which we'll talk about later. So see the Gemara, we'll get to it later, source number 5. Rava told the people, B'nai Mechoza, line number 4 in my sheets, Bi'ur chamer de b'nei chayala mi bataychu. Eliminate the chametz of the Persian soldiers that you're forced to bake for them from your house. Since you're obligated to pay if it gets lost, he says, here's the key word, kidil chondami. Kidil chondami. It's like it's yours. What did Rava mean to say? That somehow you acquire ownership, or even though you don't acquire ownership on this chametz, since you're associated with it and you care about it, you violate Bayi Rabbi Yamatze. So that's the question we're going to talk about today. Is Bayi Rabbi Yamatze contoured purely on legal terms, ownership or non-ownership? Or is Bayi Rabbi Yamatze not a function of ownership, it's a function of some relationship with the chametz, even in the absence of classic ownership? And we're going to discuss that question along two different lines. One line is going to be, is an association with chametz, even without ownership, sufficient to violate Bayi Rabbi Yamatze? Let's say I don't have ownership, but somehow I have a linkage and association, and I say, look, I don't own it, and I'm still over Bayi Rabbi Yamatze. The flip side of that logic would be, can it be that in order to violate Bayi Rabbi Yamatze, I need more than ownership? Bayi Rabbi Yamatze is saying, in addition to ownership, you need something even more powerful. Namely, can this chiddush in Bayi Rabbi Yamatze be a kul, not a kul, be a chumrah, but can it reduce the standards for the isser? Or maybe it increments the standards for the isser. In order to violate, you have to be more than an owner or less than an owner. So it's the same question, but the question occupies just different spheres of thought. So we're going to take a look at the first sphere. Can you say, I don't own it, and I still violate Bayi Rabbi Yamatze? And the second question is, can I say I own it, but I still don't violate Bayi Rabbi Yamatze, so I'm not sufficiently associated with the chametz, even though legally I own it? So that's today's roadmap for this year today. So regarding the first question, we're going to take a look at the Gemara's discussion, and then a discussion which is implicit in the Gemara, and then, of course, a very, very famous sheet of the Vilna Gaon based on Rashi, which may be based on this Mahalach. Okay, so let's start with the Gemara. The Gemara, as I mentioned before, highlights the difference between the first pasuk, lecha, that sounds like you have to own it, and the second pasuk, which omits the word lecha, yamatze, sounds like you violate even without owning it. So the Gemara compromises, or not compromises, but comes to the following conclusion. Let's see the Gemara. Source number 3, Tana Rabbanan Chus Yamsele Yamatze Bevatechem Atamad Lamar. Why is the Torah saying Yamatze if it already said Lo Yira? That's why I organized the Psukim that way, because that's how Chazal read the Psukim. Lo Yira seems like the standard, Yamatze seems like the Chiddush, even though textually there's a reversal. So Gemara says, Alok for Nemer Le Rechasa Le Chacham Schot Gulacha. Gemara says, source number 3, the Fisha Nemer Le Rechasa Or Shelcha Yataroa Lotero Shelchem Shel Gavoa. So you can have Chametz that doesn't belong to you because it's Hakdish or Tzacherim. So maybe you should be able to take chametz of a goy, or for that matter of a Jew, and the Jews violate, but you won't violate. Talmud Lomar, lo yimatze. So lo yimatze stretches Bayi Rabbi Yamatze from classic legal ownership to someone who has a chrayos and a pikadon that they're watching. As the Gemara updates a little bit later, this is the Gemara, the continuation of the Gemara. The Gemara is very choppy. It quotes a long brisa at the Hamid Beis. It dissects the brisa, and then a little bit later it gets to the actual implementation. It's what I just said before. Amar Mar, source number 5. Yachol Yatmin v'kav v'kdonis v'ner nachrim. Tamar lam lo yamatze. You can't have a pikadon. You violate the bayirah. Hamid reisha shalchaya teros shalchem shalgavah. But already said it's ownership. The Gemara says lo kasha. Line number 3, source 5. Ha de kabbalah lechrayas. Ha de lo kabbalah lechrayas. So the conclusion of the Gemara M'sachem Daf Hamid Beis is that though the Torah says shalcha, the Torah offsets shalcha with the word yimatze. And since yimatze doesn't have lecha, so the not really compromised position, but the distillation of the two, is that even if you don't own it, but you are watching a pikadon of someone else, and it's chametz, you violate bal yira bal yimatze. So this is a big chiddush. Even though I don't legally own it, I still violate bal yira bal yimatze. So based on our original model, we can take this chiddush in one of two ways. One way to take the chiddush is, it's a chiddush in pikadon. This has nothing to do with Bayi Rabbi Yamatze. Bayi Rabbi Yamatze is based on kinyanim. The Gemara's purpose on Daf Hamid Beis Msachim is to teach you that you have kinyanim, one of pikadon that you're watching. Part of owning something is being responsible for something. If my car gets hit by lightning, I pay for it. So ownership is liability. Not liability, but coverage. So if I decide to cover your item, I'm not the baal, but I have certain kinyanim. And those kinyanim may be sufficient to be mechayim Bayi Rabbi Yamatze. And this would open a whole portal into how we view the world of Shomer. The Gemara in Baba Kama says, Arba nechesir tachas abayilim, shebachinim shemesocha nesocha vesocher. Sounds like there is a degree. On the other hand, the Baal can be makdish an item in the house, beis shama kebeis baal. But this would be one way to take the chiddush. The chiddush of Rabbi Yamase for Kabbalah Zacharias is based on Kabbalah Zacharias delivering or endowing some degree of a kinyan. The other mahalach is, as I said before, that a person who is a shomer has absolutely no kinyanim. He's yad shomer ki yad bailim dami. Elamai, if you take achrayus, you're sufficiently invested, and we'll try to define that term. You're sufficiently associated, linked. That's a very vague term. We'll have to see what creates linkage and association. But that association, that I have to worry about the item and pay for the item, means that I violate by Rabbi Matzah, even in the absence of any bailus. These are the two ways to understand the Gemara's chiddush. Now, of course, we can't appreciate those different approaches until we see a nafka mina. To have a nafka mina, it's all just mental gymnastics. So what would the nafka mina be? Whether the chiyav of Bal Rabbi Matze for a shomer is based on partial bailus, or the chiyav of Bal Rabbi Matze for a shomer is based on a new halacha, a new chiddush in Bal Rabbi Matze, that association is sufficient. So the chara, we'd have to gauge what level of achrayus is necessary in order to make me violate Bal Rabbi Matze. And number two, does it have to be encased in the formal context of a shomer, or could it just be responsibility, even if it's non-halachic shomer? Those would be the two models I could use to try to break this light, to break this, like you always have to, nafkamina is like a prism. Prism breaks light into different colors, and nafkamina breaks logic into different, it's like a breaker. So in order to break this question, I want to find Rishonim who will tell me, well, you need this level of achrayus to be over by Rabbi Matze, or even this level of achrayus is sufficient. Or Rishonim will tell me, you need to be a formal shomer to violate by Rabbi Matze, even this level is sufficient. Okay, so that's the question. I'm going to take a few steps back because I added this a little bit last night, as you said before. I forgot that I added it for Aleph. This question of how to understand Bal Rabbi Matze in general, not just for the Shomer, but even for Chametz that you legitimately own, let alone the Shomer, not to mention the Shomer, this question was already addressed by the Ramban in a slightly different context. And here you see the cross-pollination of Lamdas, where right now we're trying to define Bal Rabbi Matze. But defining Bal Rabbi Matze will help us define the Bal Rabbi Matze solution. What's the solution to Bal Rabbi Matze? Bittel. So this is something which Rishonim struggled with. I understand if I mashbis the chametz, if I burn on Bal Rabbi Matze, there's no chametz. But why should Bittel work? So Tosfos believe that Bittel is a form of hefker. That when I'm mevatel chametz, the hefker, I'm giving up monetary ownership. The Rabban has a list of 7 or 8 famous kashas on Shitas HaTosfos, and he comes up with a new idea. His new idea, here's the beauty of Lamdas, his new idea for understanding Bittel is based on his understanding of Bal Rabbi Matze. He takes the second model for Bal Rabbi Matze, that you don't violate it because you own the Chametz, you don't own the Chametz because there's no utility, it's Aser Ba'al, you violate it for the connection that you have with Chametz, even your Chametz, let alone a Pekadah that you're watching, even your Chametz, and Bittel breaks the connection. Had you owned Chametz, had the first model been true, then the Ramban's Bittel wouldn't have been effective. Since the second model is true, we'll see the language of the Ramban because it's so clear, the only chiyuv by Rabbi Matze is based on association, Bittel can break that association. So I'm going back because it's such a fun foundational language in the Ramban source. That's on the second page. It's the first source on the second page. It's laid 4 Aleph. Ramban says, L'kachani omer, sha'bittel mo'er l'chtzio mitaras chametz achshiv ka'afar. The heter zeh midivar Rabbi Shmuel, shnei divar me'ed b'shusa shaladam, asa nakasav kilayim b'shusa. Kiyo shabik l'tar shalei chametz b'shusa. Here's the key word. Isiri hana eino mamon. Lo karina be'lecha. There's no lecha to begin with in chametz before there's bittel, because you don't own chametz. Bidinhu, logically, shalei avar le'beklom. You shouldn't violate by Rabbi Matze, because you don't own chametz. Ela, shatar asaso, ki'ilu hu b'shusa, lavar le'beshnei lavim. Imnesha daito alav, here's the key line, virotze bikiyumo, the substance of the isser is the association, the concern, the mental investment. Lafikach zeshe, schema daito ladas tarv, yetze levatlo. So without getting into the nitty gritty of bittel, when I comment on mevatel, I break the association. As far as I'm concerned, this is dust. As far as I'm concerned, I'm not interested. If you want, just, we're not talking about that shir today, but it's machlokes between Tosfos and the Ramban, how to view bittel. Tosfos versus Ramban, Rashi, Rambam. There are some differences. Tosfos feels that bittel is hefker. Rashi, Rambam, and Ramban say it's more like defining the chametz as afar. Our nusach bittel incorporates both. Livtov leve hefker kafir da'ara. We create hefker to encompass Tosfos of pshat. Kafir da'ara addresses Rashi, Rambam, Ramban, or that general group of Rishonim. So the Ramban already, this is really fascinating, factored the definition of Bal Rabbi Matze into the efficacy of bittel. The logic of the Ramban is, had Bal Rabbi Matze been based on ownership, and had the Torah endowed you with real ownership, Bittel would be ineffective. Tosfos doesn't have that logic. Tosfos feels that Bittul can cover even an own chametz, because according to Tosfos, Bittul is hefker. So for the Ramban, the only efficacy of Bittul is presupposing that you don't really own chametz, and that Bai Rabbi Matzah is based on linkage, and the linkage can be broken through Bittul. This is a very, very foundational language in the Ramban, and it really opens the sukkah. I'm sorry about the backwards. Let's get back into the question of Pikadon. Why do you violate Bai Rabbi Matzah if a chametz you don't own, but you've agreed to watch and to be responsible to pay? Is it because you are a partial owner, you're like an owner by agreeing to cover it? Or you're not an owner, but you're invested and you care about it and you're the shomer of the chametz? So the first nafka yamin will be, what level of achrayus is necessary in order to create a Bai Rabbi Matzah violation? So here there are three shitas in Mishonim. For the sake of brevity, I'll pick the Polish shita. It's not the middle shita. The middle shita is obviously the most intriguing because I can borrow from either logic, but we don't have time to be as nuanced in this year. I'm just trying to give you an overall view. So Tosfos and Shavuos in the Meiri, we'll just read Tosfos and Shavuos, they claim that the Isser of Bai Rabbi Matzah only applies to a Shomer who is the equivalent of a Shoel. Namely, someone who has agreed to pay for everything. Shia, Gineva Vaveda, Onsim. I've come and I said I'm going to be, even if I'm not a Shoel, I'm going to pay for everything, no matter what happens to your chametz. That person violates Bai Rabbi Matzah. But anyone less, according to the Meir and Tosfos, would not violate Bai Rabbi Matzah. Let's see at least Tosfos in Shavuos, source number 7. Tosfos says, V'hashta hada mina b'perakam et p'sachem gavi chametz. Kiven dilu mignav o mitzvah b'shusai chukai ki ditchu dami, Rava's statement to the people of Mechoza, be careful, the chametz that you're baking for the soldiers, you may violate by Rabbi Matzeh, because it may be stolen. Sounds like even achrayus for it being stolen is sufficient. He says no. The ilo mechayit that mitzvah ba'ones, line number 3, only if you're obligated to pay for onsin. The ilo mechayit ba'onsin, line number 3, source 7, if you don't have to cover onsin, afilo mischayit b'achrayus k'nei b'aveda, ein zakak levar. So going to Tosfos in Shavuos, it's also in the Meirim Sachim, only a supreme level of achrayus. Can I see Reuven just close the door? Only a supreme level, thank you, supreme level of achrayus will generate Bai Rabbi Matzah. Anything less than full onsin will be insufficient. Whereas the Rosh quotes the opposite sheet, the sheet of the Bahag, one of the great works of the Gaonim, people typically associated with Mar Yehudai Gaon, but recent scholarship has suggested it's of Shimon Kayara, it's one of the earlier Gaonim, but it's a Gaonic work, one of the first Shulchan Aruch. The Bahag quoted by the Rosh says, source number 6, was we the end, not the Rosh Hashita, u'behag kasav afila shemachinam nami. If I'm just a plain, simple shemachinam, and I'm not really chayev for Gneva Aveda, and I'm not really chayev for Ones, I'm just chayev for Pshia, that's enough to make me chayev, and by Rabbi Matzah, the chametz I'm watching. So here we have a radical machlokas between the Bahag and Tosfos and Shavuos. Tosfos and Shavuos says, Bai Rabbi Matzah is only generated by a comprehensive level of achrayus. The Bahag says even minimal level of achrayus generates. Why would they argue so radically, so dichotomously? Could it be, again, this is how Lamdas tries to read Rishonim backwards into logic, could it be that their real machlokas was this question? If the Isra Bai Rabbi Matzah is based on the Shomer acquiring ownership, well, which Shomer classically acquires ownership? The Shoel, because it's Chayiv Menonsin. In fact, that's why the Shoel is Chayiv Mishas Hotzah. There's a whole range of halachos that indicate that the Shoel's Chayiv is because I'm basically making a Kenyan. I'm using your item. I'm Chayiv Menonsin. Said otherwise, the way to turn someone into a Baal is to make him completely Chayiv Menonsin, as I said before. If my car gets damaged by lightning, I pay. So only by being Chayiv in everything can you be considered the Baal on a Chayiv as you're watching. So if I'm trying to turn the Shomer into a quasi-Baal, I may only create Bai Rabbi Matzah for the supreme Shomer who's Chayiv Enonsin. Whereas if I'm just trying to create a connection with the item, then a Shomer Chinam was Chayiv and she has to watch, has to worry about the item. So it could very well be that the Bahag and Tosfos and Shavuos are really debating this issue. If I'm trying to create quasi-ownership for a Shomer because Bai Rabbi Matzah is pivoted in ownership, only supreme onsim chiyuvim. If I'm just trying to create linkage and even minimal Shomer chinam onsim, the big question is Shitas HaRosh, which is in the middle, but we don't have time to break open the rush right now. Okay. The second question, Shalom Aleichem. The second question, which we shown and discuss, is it only a Shomer who's chayiv? Or anyone that has to have responsibility for the items? This is based on the Chlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid. Remember Rava's case before about the people in Mechoza who were forced to bake bread for the soldiers and were forced to feed the soldiers, and Rava said, you're in danger of violating Bai Rabbi Matzah, get rid of your chametz. Did those people ever agree to be Shomrim? It sounds like the army came in and they just superimposed this quartering law on the local Jews in Persia. They had to feed the soldiers. They never agreed to be a Shomer. And on top of that, which is a secondary question, even had they agreed to be a shomer, the mafkir here was a guy, and there's no halachas of a shomer by a guy. So were those people actually shomerim? The Rambam felt no. The Rambam felt that from that halacha and that story, we can derive that you don't have to be a classic formal shomer on someone's chametz to be chayiv in bali rabbi matze. This is the Rambam, source number 8. Goy anas shehifkid chemso eitzil Yisrael. Im yodea Yisraeli, sheim avar o nigna mechayiv l'shalmo v'kofeo v'yonza l'shalim, af al pishlo kibol achrayus. You didn't accept it. It's imposed upon you. Harez l'chayiv l'vara. You violate Bayi Rabbi Yamatze just for the fact that you have to cover the object's liability. The Ravid and many other Rishonim disagree. I don't have time to read the Ramban, but let's just see the Ravid's disagreement. Hasagas Ravid, Goy Anash Efkid Chemso, Amr Avram, source 8, line 4. Davar Zer Hotzim Yimad, Amrulu Rav Levnei Mechuzah B'ir Chamid B'chayala. The Rambam inferred this from the story of Rava. Kivin Deil Migna B'shusach Yidid Chudami. V'nid Melon, the Rambam believed, incorrectly according to the Ravid, Shazach Raiz Min Anas Uvial Kochim Haya. And therefore the Rambam derived that even imposed or coerced Achrayas generates by Rabbi Yamatze for the victim or the person that's responsible. The Ravid reinterprets the story of Rava. The Ramban reinterprets the story of Rava. It's a fascinating question. Maybe Dina de Machus Dina creates a form of Shomer in the Ramban. I'm not going to read the Ramban, but this is part of the Machlokas Ravid and Rambam. It's not about the degree of liability. That was the Machlokas between the Bahag and Tosus and Shavuos, but about does liability have to be streamed through classic Shomer categories? Or even liability that's imposed upon you without you ever agreeing to be a shomer, or without you even being capable of being a shomer, because it's a guy who's the mafkid, which you violate by Rabbi Yamatze. So it seems like this question as well, though less direct than the question of degree of liability, the Rashi and the Tosfos and the Bahag, seems like this question as well may be impacted by our question of by Rabbi Yamatze. If by Rabbi Yamatze is bailus, somehow by being a shomer, by being responsible, I achieve quasi-bailus, so I don't need to be a formal shomer. If I agree to cover your item, let's say an extra shomer legal responsibility, I sign a document with you, whatever happens to your chavis, I'm responsible. Effectively, I have stake in that chavis because I cover all responsibilities, and therefore I can be considered a baal because I'm covering everything. Whereas if we're trying to create linkage, is linkage something that can just be psychological? I'm linked to the item because I'm agreeing because I have stake in the item. Or does linkage have to be a halachic link? So if I'm a shomer, I have a halachic relationship with the item. I'm a shomer on that pikadon. Whereas if I'm not a shomer, even if I have full-scale responsibilities, that may not be sufficient linkage. So here we're starting to try to sharpen what does it mean to be associated with chametz, even though you don't own it. We'll see in other Rishonim this may come to the fore as well. So there are two questions that will help us decide why you're chayav by Rabbi Yamatze for pikadon. Is it based on achieving partial kinyanim or creating a relationship? One is the degree of liability necessary to generate by Rabbi Yamatze. One is, does it have to be encased in a formal shomer relationship or even non-shomer responsibility? If this is true, if we believe that by Rabbi Yamatze isn't pivoted on bailus, and number two, you can be violating by Rabbi Yamatze even without being a baal, this may help us understand a Gemara conversation in the Gemara and maybe a related chumrah of Rashi, very famous chumrah of Rashi, which applies to all of us, Baruch Hashem and Eretz Yisrael. Okay, number one. The Gemara, going back to the Gemara, this is source number 12. The Gemara is a Hava Amina, relating to those two psukim. Remember we said that you're chayev for a chametz that you take from a guy that you are mekabel achrayus, and you're pater of chametz of a guy that you're not mekabel achrayus. So the Gemara says as follows, source number 12. Ainli ela benachri shelo kibashto. I only know this to be true by a guy that you don't have authority over. The Ein Sharim Chabuchatzin, he doesn't live with you in your house. Nachri Shekibashto V'Sharim Chabuchatzin Minayin. How do I know that this applies to a guy that I have control over, or have authority over, or Kibashto, he lives under my supervision, under my authority, he lives in my chatzin, my backyard. How do I know this applies? Talmud Lomar Yimatze, Lo Yimatze. Now this is a very, very awkward line. And Abaye and Rava have a machlokas how to read this line. For the sake of brevity, I won't go into Abaye's inversion of this. But Rava believes that this discussion, this havamina, that maybe a nachri shekibashto is different than a nachri she'enu kibashto, is a havamina the Gemara raises, even if you're not mekabel achrayus. maybe you'd violate Bal Yira Bal Yimatzeh on the chametz of a guy, even though you weren't mekabel achrayus, because he happens to be living with you in your chatzer under your authority. That's an amazing havamina. This is a total paradigm breaker. It's one thing to say I violate Bal Yira Bal Yimatzeh for my chametz. Okay. It's one thing to say I violate Bal Yira Bal Yimatzeh for a chametz and a mekabel achrayus. That could be mine. But how in the world would I violate Bal Yira Bal Yimatzeh for the chametz of a guy? I wasn't mekabel achrayus, and yet he lives with me, and therefore I violate Bal Yira Bal Yimatzeh on chametz I don't own. Okay, right, but the Gemara already parsed that pasuk. Shalchaya terav tzor shalchem shalgavoa. That's mutter. Okay, so that's the Havamina. So this Havamina, let's say I'm going to eliminate the way Rashi learns. Rashi doesn't learn this way. But this Havamina may be indicative of our Malach. Had the halacha by Rabbi Yimatzeh been based on Bailus or pseudo Bailus, which is achieved by a Shomer, there's no way the Gemara would even consider this possibility to be Chayev on Chametz that you don't own, you're not a Shomer. But if the halacha by Rabbi Yimatzeh is based on association, so Chametz that I own I'm associated with, Chametz that Mekabel Achrayus I'm associated with, and Chametz that a guy owns in my Chatzer, but I'm in charge and I'm responsible and he's submissive to me, maybe that's a sufficient linkage to create Bal Yira Bal Yimatzeh, at least as a Havamina. The Maskana is no. You don't violate Bal Yira Bal Yimatzeh on Chametz of a guy that you're not Mekabel Achrayus, even though he lives with you. Nachi Shekibashto. The big question is, what's the Maskana? Is the Maskana you don't violate Bal Yira Bal Yimatzeh because it's all based on Bailus and there's no Bailus here? Or is the Maskana that it's based on association, but this isn't enough of an association, even though he lives with you? The Ramban, and we're starting to see the Ramban, and we'll see his Talmud, Rabbeinu David. Remember the Ramban I said before, defines Bal Yira Bal Yimatzeh based on linkage, and therefore Bittul could be effective. Had it not been based on linkage, Bittul would be ineffective. Here too, the Ramban appears to learn the Gemara this way, as a Havamina. Okay, the Bal Amar also, interestingly enough, they both came to the same conclusion about the Gemara, although they came to different conclusions about the Psak, not necessarily. But we'll just read the Ramban. And I said before, the Tosfos views Hefker as Bittul. Excuse me, Bittul as Hefker. And the Ramban has a list of 7 or 8 questions against Tosfos. Many of his questions are linguistic. It doesn't sound like Hefker. It sounds like Bittul. Some of the questions are halachically. The terms and parameters of Bittul are different from Hefker. You can't be Mafker on Shabbos. You can be Vatul on Shabbos. But then the Ramban, after asking a whole bunch of localized questions to prove that Bittul isn't Hefker, he comes for the kill shot. He goes for the jugular. He says, and you know what, Tosfos? I'm not even sure that Hefker would be effective. All of his previous questions are Hefker would be effective, but Bittul is something else. Then the Rabban opens his mind to the possibility that if someone were to be Mafkir Chametz in Erev Pesach, that wouldn't be sufficient. You'd still violate Bal Yira Bal Yimatzeh. Why would I violate Bal Yira Bal Yimatzeh in Chametz that I was Mafkir? So let's see the Ramban. Oh, I didn't quote that. I'll read the Ramban. That's one of the quotes that even after 12 o'clock I forget that. The Ramban, Msachim, after he has all his questions, he says, well, first paraphrase it. He says, when I'm mafgir my chametz, I still have the possibility to go and be zocher in that chametz again. Because it's hefgir, and presumably it's my unique ability because no one else really knows it's hefgir. So the second I'm mafgir the chametz, I may not legally own it, but I have the acquisitional capacity. Yachal liskos bo. And the Ramban says, Yachal liskos bo is enough of a connection to make me chayav Bal Yira Bal Yimatzeh. There's no kinyan that's yet been achieved, but it could be zocher bo. Ramban says, how do I know that the ability to be zocher in something creates Bal Yira Bal Yimatzeh? This havamina of the Gemara. What makes Nachrisha Kibashto so horrible, at least in theory, before the Gemara rejects it? Because since he's under your supervision, your authority, I could go and take it from him. I don't own it yet. There's no kinyan. Since I can be zocher, the Gemara thought that was enough to make me chayiv and Bal Yira Bal Yimatzeh. The Gemara rejected that because he's still an autonomous person and maybe he'll say no. But the upshot of that rejection is, but something that I can be zocher, even though I don't yet own it, I violate Bal Yira Bal Yimatzeh. That's the Ramban's language. I'll just read you the language. It's a two-sentence Ramban. Ramban says, V'od yeshli safik behefker. Maybe it doesn't work. Kivan deles lehu bailam. There's no bal here. V'lav dacherim hu. Afal pi she'eno shelcha. You don't own it. Eino b'chlal heter zeh. you still violate by Rabbi Matzeh. The Ihu Matzi Zachi Bei Benafshe. You could acquire it. Here's the line, Tvei V'Tvei Migoy Shekibashto. And this is more capable of acquiring than a Goy Shekibashto. Goy Shekibashto, the Gemara thought, since you can acquire it, maybe you will. But no, don't worry. You don't violate by Rabbi Matzeh. But this is even more vulnerable to acquisition, more open to acquisition than a Goy Shekibashto. And therefore, the Ramban says, you violate by Rabbi Matzeh on Chamit Shel Hefker. And therefore, according to Ramban, by Rabbi Matzeh has to be bittel. So this Havamin of the Gemara, I'm going to repeat the Havamina because the Maskana is going to be crucial. This Havamina, that you violate by Rabbi Matzeh, not just on your Chametz, or on Chametz Yumakabal Achrayos, but on Chametz that you're associated with because the owner lives in your Chatzah under your authority, that Havamina may reflect the Gemara's viewing by Rabbi Matzeh as non-proprietary, not based on ownership. Question is, when the Gemara rejects that scenario, is it moving back towards legal bailus, or is it maintaining by Rabbi Matzeh, an associative by Rabbi Matzeh, and the Ramban says, okay, maybe in this case there's not enough of a linkage, but when you do have enough of a linkage by Hefker, you violate by Rabbi Matzeh. And again, without getting too deep into the question, we're starting to define what that linkage is. The linkage, according to Ramban, is the ability to acquire it. I could say the linkage isn't just the ability to acquire it, as we'll see in a second, but any linkage, the fact that he's in my chatzer, that I'm walking by, that we're sharing meals, that he's sharing mechad b'chatzer. So all of a sudden, this whole view of Rabbi Matzeh is starting not just to help us understand why you're chayav for pikadon, machlok is rishonim, but you are chayav for pikadon, but the ability to extend Rabbi Matzeh to areas in which there's no ownership, but there is linkage. And the first case we had was a guy who's under your tutelage. Ramban says, well, that you're not sufficiently linked to, but something you're mafkir, you are linked to. In a second, if I answer the question, we'll see Rashi's chiddush. Yes?
Sounds like, what's the concern? Lo yimatzeh bebatechad, because you might come to eat it.
Right.
So even if I'm not so linked to it, even if it's not mine, but the reality, I might come to eat it. They're going to broaden out a lot more.
Right. What's your name?
Noam Alav.
Okay, no lie. Sorry. You should really be called Shimon. Why? Because Shimon was Darshim and Tamid Dekra. So Shimon always felt you can get to the lundus from the pasuk, but we don't pasuk like Rosh Shimon, so we have to see how Chazal stream the pasuk. It's certainly important to help open the minds, but it's hard to take a pasuk and then link right to halacha. That was Rosh Shimon's art. So you're like Rosh Shimon by your chai. It's not so bad, especially coming up for like Bomer. But typically we then take the pasuk and see how Chazal interpret it, although it helps open our mind to the possibility, but it's hard to reach that conclusion based on the language of the pasuk. Yes, ma'am.
That also then connects to the reason for the Dika, which the Gemara says that why do we do, since Midaraisa Bibitul Baal Masagi, why do we do Bidika also? Because you might go back on your
right,
Bidul.
Right, so that's a famous Kasha. Right, right, right.
Gun. And so also because
right. Right. So you're saying it's not just the worry, but the ability to undo the Bidika or the Bidul itself means the Bidul is ineffective. So Yishanim don't say that. The Meram Chalaba says that what it means is the Bidul is offering, you may reverse it. Namely, the reversibility of Bittul is part of the Machlokas Tosis in the Ramban, whether it's Hefker or not. If it's Hefker, you can't really reverse Hefker, you'd be Zoch again. But you're saying the reversibility itself means that the issue is ineffective. That I haven't seen
any. I'm saying that would be ineffective Midoraisa, but if you sort of view it as called the Tachin Rabbanan.
Okay, so it's Rabbanan we're worried about the same, right? So it's a big Chiddush, but it's an interesting Chiddush logically. Okay, let's come to the big Chiddush of Rashi, and then we'll end the first part of the Shia, then we'll move to the second part of the Shia. The big Chiddush in Rashi is. Yes?
The Havamina that the Ramban is referring to, that there's any relationship that you could be, you know, go and be Zocha, can hypothetically create an Isser Vali or Vali Masseh, could literally stretch it in infinitum, right?
That's what we're going to see in a moment. But by the way, if you want to see the language of Yechol's list, let's look at the Meiri 13. While I'm starting the next Gemara, the Meiri says, Sakadei Techamina, line number 4, Levi Nachashikibash. That's the Balamar, I'm sorry. The Meiri is number 12, Ratzalamu Shuchanak Biyadcha, he's suppressed to you, Leisa Siba, Gonchu Schircha Vlakitcha, he's your sharecropper, Shim Tirza, Litoli Azmacha, and Yechalim Chos Biyadcha. He quotes the Ramban. The ability to take the Goy's Chametz means that I violate by Rabbi Matzeh. Which leads to the following, which is...
It sells their Chametz, it's in their pantry. You could just open up your pantry and take whatever.
Right, and that's why the Ramban says that Bittul has to operate on an entirely different plane. It's not Bailus, and it's not... I'm turning it into Afar, and even though I can take it, I'm on a different plane. To me, it's considered Afar, and my ability to take it doesn't undo the Afar quality that I've endowed Chametz with according to Ramban. He's more complicated than that, but that's certainly Rashi's shot. Anyway, remember we said before that the Gemara says, Shulcha Yatarawa, this is the paradigmatic line, Avol Tara Shulachayim Mishul Gavoa. So you can't have your own chametz, but you can have another person's chametz. The Gemara left that line very general. Achayrim and Gavoa. So we know what gavoa means, hakdash, although there's a Yishalmi that says you do violate by your way when it's in hakdash, but that's not in the Bavli. The Bavli says mefurish, you don't violate by your way when it's in hakdash. And number two, acherim. So as far as I'm concerned, acherim is acherim. Whether acherim is Shimon or acherim is Sylvester, whatever the name is. It could be a guy, it could be a Jew. Rashi qualifies, source number 9. L'fi she'nemar v'leirah l'cha, dimiksiv l'cha, mashmirina, shelcha yatera, aval atera b'gvulin shel acherim, kigon nachri v'shel gavo. Rashi sounds like it's only mutter to have chametz of acherim without achrayus. With achrayus you violate, but without achrayus, only if the acherim is a goy. The acherim is a yid, you violate by rabbi matzeh.
What does kigon mean?
That's
kigon implies nachri is an example of achirim, but not the definition of it.
So says you. So what I like to say, but the Vilna Gaon famously disagreed. Vilna Gaon says, "B'shel Yisrael aser," source number 10, "midelo kamar avol atarora asheino shulcha atara." Why does the Torah use the word achirim? Sounds like achirim moving is like a different. She said, "Eino shulcha atara," which would cover everyone. V'kim neshem shul kibal achrayas. Mishabura quotes this Vilna Gaon, which leads to an amazing finish. Talk about Koy Yisrael HaRevim Zelos. I violate by your Abaye Matzeh for your Chametz. Now the Lumdus is as follows. I'll describe the Lumdus. The application is a little bit dicey. Like, how far does it extend? Until now, we've had contained associations. I'm associated with your chametz because I'm watching it. You're not associated with his chametz because you're not watching it. I'm associated with the goy's chametz shekibashto because he's in my chatzer. You're not associated with the chametz because he's not on your chatzer. I'm associated with the chametz that was mafker because I'm the only one that knows it's hefker. You're not associated with the chametz that was mafker because you don't know. So there's been a self-contained universe of association. Who's associated with the chametz? The shomer, the bala chatzer, the goy's living in, the person is mafker, the chametz. Here, you're opening a Pandora's box. If Kol Yisrael are Eben Zil is there, and that creates association between every Jew and every person, every other Jew's Chametz, so that means that every single person violates by Rabbi Matzeh for one person that has Chametz. Here's where you have to separate Halacha from reality. Can Halacha really determine that? Well, maybe it's only people that live in the neighborhood, that have the ability, that he'll listen to. But one thing is clear. This Maskana of Rashi cannot possibly be accepted if by Rabbi Matzeh is pivoted on bias. Here we reach the end of our Lamdasha line. There's no way to flip this halacha. Everything else until then we could have flipped. Well, the Shalmei really has quasi-bailus. And believe me, even Kibashto, you can try to turn it to quasi-bailus as a Havamina. There's only Havamina. Here there's a Maskana that I violate by Rabbi Matzeh for another Yitz Chametz. So Lachara, this Rashi seems to fall in line with the second Mahalach. That by Rabbi Yamatzeh is not based on Bailus, but based on some degree of association. And we've tried, again, we don't have that much time to sharpen, we tried also to define what association is. Is it investment, because I worry about it? Is it the ability to be kone? Is it proximity? We'll have other definitions in Mirth Hashem in a few moments. Okay. So this is the end of the first part of the Shir, in which we question if by Rabbi Yamatzeh isn't based on Bailus, the standards would be less than bailus. You don't have to own something to violate by your Rabbi Matzeh. Even if you don't own it, you can violate, such as a shomer, such as a havamina of a nachish akibashto, such as another yitz chametz. Now I'm going to flip the conversation. Could it be that if by Rabbi Matzeh is based on association relationship, it's not sufficient to own chametz to violate by Rabbi Matzeh? You can only violate by Rabbi Matzeh if you have more than ownership, which would be a kula. Oh, there's certain types of chametz. Even though I own it, I don't violate by Rabbi Matzeh. So we're flipping to a kula now. Until now, we've had a chumra. Oh, you don't own it, you still violate by Rabbi Matzeh. Now we're flipping into a kula. I own it, but I still don't violate it unless certain conditions are true. So here we're going to talk about two different issues, very, very briefly, because I know time is short. Number one is, does it have to be in my physical location? Both psukim talked about gvul chabayis after they said the word l'cha. So why should location be important? Is it important? Number two is there a difference between A, the location, how proximate it is to me, bias versus gvul, and number two, the visibility of the chametz. Okay? So question number one. Do I violate by Rabbi Matzeh on chametz that I own but isn't in my rishos? So this is based on a very, very enigmatic statement in the Gemara. Let's read the Gemara just to see where it starts with, and then we'll see how the Rishonim dealt with it. So it is source number, excuse me. Where's the Gemara? There we go. Source number 15. Okay, the Gemara says as follows. It quotes, the Brisa quotes three scenarios. Scenario 1 and 2 are easy. Scenario 3 is strange. Tanu Rabbanan. A guy comes to my house on Pesach with a sandwich, and not chayiv, he didn't take a chayiv, no problem. You can see chametz, nothing wrong with seeing chametz. I know people walk and say, oh, chametz, especially in the chutzlarts, you're allowed to see chametz. It's not yours, no problem. It's not the devil. Right? We don't believe in demonizing inanimate objects, just chametz. Hifkido et slo, if the guy gave it to you, zakuk levar, that's a chayiv. So these two halachos are perfectly conventional that we see. Here is the strange line. Yichad lo bayis ein zakuk levar. If I give the guy a specific area of my house and say, put it down there, that's your area, then I'm not zakuk levar. What? If I tell the guy, put your chametz down in this area will become yours in my house, I'm not zakuk levar. What's unclear from the Gemara is this after achrayus that I tell him to put it there? Or before achrayus? If it's before achrayus, I'm not chayiv, even if I'm not miachid emakam. If I didn't take a chrayis, I could just say put it down and still putter because I didn't take a chrayis. It's his chametz. If it's after a chrayis, who cares? I'm the kabbal chrayis. I violate. So here again, there are three shittos. I'll pick the two polar shittos. Rashi takes the easy way out logically, but it's hard textually. Rashi says, source number 16, yichid lo bayis klomar, lo kiblu olav. When I say put it down here, it's like I'm saying, and I'm not your shomer. There are certain languages in the Gemara Bava Metzia, Daf Pei, that indicate Kabbalah Sachrayis, like Hanach Lefanai. And there are certain languages which indicate, I'm not interested in being a Shomer. When I say, put it down, and this is your space, it's like I'm saying, and it's your Chametz, and I'm not going to watch it. It's totally your Chametz, and not my Kabbalah Sachrayis. So again, according to Rashi, logically, there's no Chiddush here in the Gemara. Textually, it doesn't make that much, it's not so fluid. But logically, there's a Gemara repeating, basically, line number one of the trifecta, right? Hichnislo b'tzeko, enu chayiv levar, kibul achrayis, chayiv levar, yichlo malkum is like hichnislo b'tzeko, which creates a bit of a logjam in the Braisa. The Rabbeinu David and the Ramban said, "Amin haTorah, if I own chametz, and I have full bailus, but it's not in my physical rishus, I don't violate by Rabbi Matzah. Even though for everything else in the world, bailus is sufficient. Except for certain actions like but in terms of ownership, if my chametz is out of my rishus, it's in the rishus of rabbim, they're not miyayish, someone else's house, someone's mazikit, they pay me, someone's gamazit, they pay me under certain conditions. This chametz is mine. Full ownership. But since it's not in my physical location, and in this case, even though it's in my house, but that zone has already been rented out to the guy, yichid lo bayis, I don't violate by Rabbi Matzah min haTorah. Let's see the Beinu David. We don't have much of the Ramban Umsachim. You can see in the Ramban Umsachim, unfortunately. And it's very, very hard to learn Mesechtas without Ramban. Like I miss it. I'm teaching Baba Kama. It's such a gaping hole in the Sukkah. It's like, where's the Ramban? He would talk about this. Because not just the Ramban, but all of his Talmidim. You have their Rashba, and their Ritva, and their Ran. And when you learn a Mesechtas without a Ramban, it's like learning half a Mesechtas. It's not there. You realize there's fundamental conversations that the Ramban would have talked about that he's just not there. We didn't have his perushin. So in Pesachim, we don't have much of the Ramban, but we have his Talmud, Rabbeinu David, Bam Pierre. He's one of the Ramban's primary Talmudim. So Rabbeinu David, and not only is he the Talmud of the Ramban, but his language, his writing style. I wish the Ramban would have written like his Talmud. Because Rabbeinu David is much easier to read. The Ramban, Baruch Hashem, it's hard to read. You know, no way around it. I mean, the Ramban was a great writer, But since he knew Shas so well that he's writing in his own mind, and okay, slow down, what do you mean? And Rabbeinu David had the ability to write a little bit more clearer for us common folk to understand. So Rabbeinu David says, source number 18, I didn't get a chance to check if it's on the Bar Ilan. Does anyone know if it's on the Bar Ilan yet? It's a recently discovered sefer, so there's the copyright laws. Since it's copyright laws, Bar Ilan isn't always able to digitize it. I don't know if it is or it isn't, but it's literally, we're learning the Rabbeinu David, and our Zaydis couldn't learn the Rabbeinu David. They just didn't have it. I remember it came out when I was first in yeshiva, 1983. It just came out of Rabbeinu David. So here we have Rabbeinu David. It radically changed Maseches Pesachim. So, V'lo b'chametz shel goy, it's line number 4, 5. right after the brackets. V'lo b'chametz shel goy bilvad amru, el afilu chemsel shel Yisrael mamish, k'shu bebeisel shel goy, eino over alav min hatara. Quotes in Mechilta. And if you want to see the Ramban, I'm not going to take the Ramban source. He learns it from the Mishnah and from the Ralph, but source number 20. Lamadnu mikan, line number 2. Shedin chemsel shel Yisrael atzmo, so just like if I'm a kabbal achrayis and a guy's chametz and I'm chayiv, but it's in his rishos that I'm pater. Similarly, chametz that I'm mamishon, but I put into the guy's rishos, even though the physical rishos is in my house, but I've rented it out for him. Ramban says, "Ino over de botechem ksiv." No, he says botechem. Now the Ramban backtracks on this. He says, "Zolim in atar midrabani, you still chayiv by Rabbi Matzei," but it's an astounding chiddush, Bailus is insufficient to generate a violation of Vayar Avayim Matzeh. And now he's in a stanley chiddush, halach l'maisa, it's a stanley chiddush. I can take chametz and put it in the forest, or put it in this area for Sarabim. In that area, it's not mine, and not we don't pass like this Ramban. Even the Ramban doesn't pass like the Ramban, because it says, Midra Rabbani, you are violating Vayar Avayim Matzeh. But now we flip the sugya. Switching the definition of Vayar Avayim Matzeh from Bailus to association isn't a chumrah that you violate Vayar Avayim Matzeh and chametz you don't own, it's a kula. You can't violate Vayar Avayim Matzeh unless you have some non-legal, additionally non-legal relationship, which is gauged in this case by physical location. Okay, yes?
You keep using the word rent. Does that imply that the space itself, there needs to be some transfer of funds?
It sounds that way, because the Gemara, in the continuation, Darav links it to Schiris Kanya. The name of the Schiris Kanya, the Gemara says, by the fact that Yichud Lo obliterates by Rabbi Matzeh, the Gemara Sakasha from Bryce and Avodah Zarah, that you can't let a guy come into your shos with his toeva, sounds clear. It's a kind of the Gemara sounds a stira. But it sounds like the Gemara is operating either on an explicit schiris or an implicit schiris, but that it becomes his rishos.
Well, what would that mean, implicit schiris, without a transfer of funds?
Well, schiris, you don't need transfers of funds for kings. Schiris is, the Gemara says in Bava Kamma, it's schiris, in Tnepa, schiris is like, only sounds, schiris means the Bekesav Shtar v'chazaka. So, in theory, the guy makes a chazakah when he walks in. You don't need transference of funds to be kind of karki, you know, transference of funds to be kind of sliris. Okay? Okay. To conclude, this possibility that Bali Rabbi Matzah is based on a relationship, and that would increase the requirements of Bali Rabbi Matzah, increase requirements of relationship, comes about in two very fascinating statements of Rabbeinu David. Okay, now let's get back to the psukim. Remember I said before that the psukim contrast three variables. Variable number one, ownership versus non-ownership. The first pasuk has lecha, second pasuk doesn't have lecha, you might say. The second variable that the psukim talk about, or there's a dichotomy between them, is bayis ha-gvul. Le'ireh lecha chametz ve'lecha sebechol gvulecha. And the second pasuk says, shivasem soli matzeh bivatech. So, let's talk in general, and then the shiur will end with a tremendous, tremendous chiddush of the Ritva that he raises as a possibility. But to appreciate that, let's take a look at the second source that I added, which is why I added the source. The Gemara says, oh, is this the Gemara? Do I have the Gemara here? Okay, it's source 23 on the regular source. I'm sorry, source 23. Adayin ani Omer, this is the key Gemara, bevatim ovim shim by Rabbi Matzev al Yatmin, then in the houses you can't except achrayos, because the isser of yimatze, which asers achrayos, is said in the pasuk about bayis. Bigvulin, but in the other pasuk of gvulin, which is articulated around lecha, shel chaya terav, shel chem shel gavoa. Who says that this chumra of achrayos applies to bayis? Because the chumra of achrayos stems from the word yimatze, and yimatze is written in the pasuk about bayis, not gvul. Who says the chumra of achrayos applies to gvul? So the Gemara says, this is a very important Gemara, line number 3, Minayin li tina sa'am, 23, line number, so which one is it? Oh, so maybe I added it, I added it through a number, so I apologize. Is there like a WhatsApp chat you can send it to? What? Not everyone's on it. Okay, so I'll paraphrase the Gemara, I'm sorry. So Gemara says, how do you know that the Isser of Kabbalah Zachariah applies not just to Batim, but Gevulcha? Why? Because Isser of Zachariah comes in the Pasuk of Yimatzeh. Yimatzeh is Bayis, not Gevulcha. So if I have Pekadon, then Kabbalah Zachariah, I put it in my Gevul, not my house. I own the Gevul, I should be maybe Pater. The Gemara says, Minayin litin es ha'amr shel zeb bezeb v'shel zeb bezeh. Look at my hands, I'll try to visualize. How do I take these two psukim and conflate them? They're all one Pasuk. Minayin litin es ha'amr shel zeb bezeb v'shel zeb bezeh. Talmud Lomar, the Gemara says Sa'or, Sa'or. Each of them has the word Sa'or. Sa'or, Sa'or, looks Erashava. Now that phrase, Minayin Litin is Amr Shal Zeb Bezeb, Shal Zeb Bezeb, could be, as I just said, it's all one, and there's no difference between the Isurim, even though one Isur is defined as Lo Yira, the other Isur is defined as Lo Yimatzeh, and one says Bias, and one says Gvul. After all, they both say Sa'or. After all, they both don't need full ownership, even Achrayas. And there's no difference between the Pesukim. Or the Gemara says you've got two different Isurim. It just so happens with regard to this detail, ownership or non-ownership, ownership or Achrayas, there's no difference. Sa'or is a bridge, textual bridge, to say that just like in the Pasuk of V'soyim Matzim V'techem, Achrayas violates, similar in the Pasuk of V'leirah L'chasar, it violates. But it doesn't mean that we're conflating the two Pesukim. You follow? Are we keeping autonomy between the two Pesukim? We're just saying that the same issue that Yechayiv for Achrayas applies to both Pesukim. Or we're saying the Pesukim are collapsed into one. Now, if we really thought the two Pesukim were collapsed into one, then we may expect there only to be one Isser in the Minyan of Mitzvahs. The Rambam defines two separate mitzvahs. Source number 22 and 23, Sefer HaMitzvahs, Reish and Reish Aleph, Lota say, there's one Isser of Lo Yirah Chametz, there's one Isser of Lo Yimatzeh L'Chametz. So already from the Rambam, it sounds like we're not dealing with a total collapsing of the two Pesukim into one. But again, it's hard to prove from the Rambam, because Sefer HaMitzvahs and the logic of how to organize Sefer HaMitzvahs doesn't always follow the logic of Lachas. Sometimes you have things that are two in Sefer HaMitzvahs that are one in logic, and sometimes they're one in logic, but two in Sefer. Very, very famous Kasha. For example, we just read Parshas Tzav. How many Mitzvahs Ha'olah are there? One option is to say there's one Mitzvah Ha'olah. One option is to say, well, there's Shechita, there's Kabbalah Saddam, there's Rika, there's Hazara, there's Hekter Chalam. How many mitzvahs are in Paradum? Is one mitzvah Shechita and Sreifa? Is one process? So it's not always true that you can infer backwards the nature of the structure of the halacha by the nomenclature of the mitzvahs, because it could be one system that determines how you count and one system determines how they logically connect. But anyway, had we found the Rishon that makes, haven't found the Rishon, that collapses them into one Issa, that'd be amazing. There's only one issue, even though there's two Pesukim, and they're not even adjacent. But I haven't found those, Rishonim. But the Rabbeinu David raises two possibilities, one which he accepts, one which he rejects. He says, wait a second. I'm not collapsing the two Pesukim. They're only similar that in both cases, the Isser of Lo Yirah and the Isser of Lo Yimatzeh don't need Bailus. This whole Chiddush of Yimatzeh, that if you Mekabel Achrayus, you violate, it applies not just to Yimatzeh, but to Yirah. But this difference between Bayis and Gvul, that still applies. If the chametz is in my bias, then let's count. Which Isurim do I violate? Bayimatzeh. And also, Leirah, because Gvul is, if it's in my bias, it's in my Gvul. So if it's in my house, I violate two Isurim. But if the chametz is in my Gvul, not my house, let's say a storage shed I have in the middle of the Black Forest or something, or not my house, my summer home or something, it's not in Batechem, it's in Gvul, then how many Isurim will I violate? Only one. Only lo yira l'cha b'chol gvulcha, not lo yimatze b'vatecha. Because he gets it from the Pesukim. But what's the logic here? Why should I be more violating when the chametz is in my house? Why should that even be a factor? No one's going to say if the chametz is, a donut, I have two isurim, but if the chametz is only a cookie, I have one isur. The differentiator has to be relevant. It can't just be a differentiator. The chametz starts with the letter beis, and I violate two isurim. It has to be a logical differentiator. What makes chametz in my house worse than chametz in my gvul? Contact. Bialus isn't affected by where it is, but association and contact is. And the nafka minhu would be that there are two isurim here. One isur may be just for bialus, and that doesn't make a difference where it is, lo yira. And one isur based on association. And if I have it in my house, and I'm not just owning, I'm associated with it. So in my gvul, then the association is less and the isurim are reduced. Now, there are many ways to spin that. We don't have time to talk about how you'd have a two-tiered system. Let's read the Rabbeinu David. He rejects that, but then he gets to a different differentiator. It's like on the last page, source 30. V'yava gav de'iskish batim l'gvulin, akati islan l'meimar shimra chametz b'batim over mishim b'ayra b'ayimatzeh. If it's in your house, you get two. Tervar k'siv b'batim, shabatim b'chlal gvulim heim. Avol im ro'eo b'gvulin, eno over mishim b'ayra. So he rejects that. But then he gets to another nafkamina, and this he accepts. Let's assume that there's no difference between bias and gvul. And there's no difference between pikadon or not. If you get a pikadon, you violate bias and gvul. If you don't get it because you don't violate by Isaac rule. If you own it, you get two. No difference. What about chametz I can't see? What about chametz tamun? He says that maybe chametz that you can't see, you only get one iser. Which iser? Le'imatzeh. Which iser would you not violate? I see the chametz, I get two iser. And that chiddush he accepts. Again, halach lemaisa, you don't want to get an iser. Someone's going to choose a solution. Although I'll talk about a solution later. Again, why should that be valuable? Why should it make a difference if I can see it or not? The differentiator has to be relevant. Can't be this type of chametz, that type of chametz. Evidently, when I see chametz, there's more of a relationship when I don't see chametz. And if by Rabbi Masi isn't based on legal ownership, it's based on relationship. Relationship could be gauged many ways. Acquisitional ability, responsibility, location, proximity. Maybe one factor that determines the degree of association is visibility. So by the Torah, writing lo yirah, said differently, now for you, the Torah wants to stress it is not based on bilus, and it uses the word yimatze, which is a non-bilus word, but to even up the ante, it says yirah, which is completely odd here. Why would you talk about seeing something? There's no issue to see things except for Divrei's nose and Divrei. But listen, I'm not allowed to look at Avodah Zarah. Why should I not be allowed to look at Chametz? It's an amazing Chiddush. So here we've seen two different approaches to say that the fact that Bayrah is based on association increments the parameters of the requirements to be Chayiv and therefore leads to a Kula because it limits the cases for which you're Chayiv. You can own Chametz, but if it's not in your Rishus, you don't violate it. You can own chametz, and it could be in your rishus, because my woodshed is my rishus. It's not someone else's house. But if it's not my house, then I'm living in it, and I don't violate both isurim. I still get lei matzeh, I don't get lei matzeh. Or if I conceal the chametz, then I violate the isur of lei matzeh, but not lo yirah, because I don't see the chametz. Which leads to the following ritva, if you've been following the last two cases, if you combine the last two, they're really kulos, and you come to an amazing kula. What was the first kula? Remind me, what was the first kula? House, how many serum? Gvul, one. Based on location. What's the second kula? Open chametz, reveal chametz, two. Conceal chametz, one. What happens if I conceal chametz in my gvul?
Deliberately.
So can anyone take me through the logic? Why may I be putter if I can seal chametz in my gvul? So there's no, use the language of the pasuk. There's no iser of bias, because it's not my bias. So which pasuk falls? So the only pasuk available is the gvul pasuk. What's the definition of the gvul iser? Le'ira. Said otherwise, without playing around with psukim, there has to be some degree of association, either location or optics. If both fail, even though you own it, it's not your chametz. Follow the logic? Don't just play around with the words. In addition to bilus, there has to be some degree of extra bilus association. And that extra bilus association has to either be proximity, my house, not my woodshed, or even if it's my woodshed, I can see it if I get there. If both of those fail, you own it, you don't violate anything. It's a bigger chiddush than the Ramban because it's still in your rishus. That woodshed is my rishus, but it's not my bias, and I can't see it. And that could be why the Rambam is creating separation between these two isur. Okay, so those are the two different perspectives on whether by Rabbi Matzi, driven by bailus, or driven by some association. The first side of the conversation, the first side of the shir is, you don't own it, but you still may violate it. It comes across in the Gemara by Kabbalah Zacharias. But Kabbalah Zacharias may be a form of Kenyan, so you can't really prove. But the very fact that you're chayef for Kabbalah Zacharias, we'd have to go to a second level, like a second tier of conversation, to prove whether Kabbalah Zacharias is based on Kenyanim or association. Let's go down a level. What type of Zacharias, minimal or maximal? Can it be only through the formal relationship of a shomer or even through coerced Zacharias? If you feel that way, then you may extend it to a Nachmi Shekibashto, which is Gemara Dehava Mina. And the rejection, it may still maintain Bali Rabbi Matzah as a function of association, but a Nachi Shekibashto is not sufficiently associated, but that would lead to Rashi's Chiddush that every Yid is associated with Mina Vayah by Rabbi Matzah. The second side, which is the one the Ramban took, is Ramban claimed, no, this is Shitas the Ramban throughout all of Sachem. He read the Gemara, Asana Kasaf Kila Bershusa, in a non-literal way. That's why Pitul is effective. Ramban Rabbeinu David said that if you own it, but it's not in your Rishus, you don't violate by Rabbi Matzeh, based on that line of Yichud B'Makom Ein Chayav L'Vayr. Based on that, his Talmud, Ramban didn't talk about this, but his Talmud says, okay, let me explore this a little further. Let me take it even further than my Rebbe. My Rebbe said, if it's not in your Rishus, it's the Rishus of a guy, even though you own it. What happens if it's in your Rishus, but it's not in your house? What happens if it's in your Rishus, but you don't see it? And then, the next generation later, the Ritva, who's part of the Ramban's Masoros, which is end with source 31, the Ritva says, Aval, he says, Acherim Pirishu, Lohani Gezer Shalitin Kulu Deglim Avatim, he says, Aval, Lekka Begvulin, Elalav, De Lo Yira Bechut. In Gvulin, which is not bias, you don't have Yimatze, you just have Yira. And here are the three huge, huge words, the Chiddush, Umina, and the conclusion is, Desharin and Tamon. Chametz Tamon will be Mutter Begvulin. Because Chametz Tamon is not Lo Yira, so there won't be an Issa Begvulin. Chametz Tamon is only Yimatze, and Yimatze would only apply to bias. Just huge chiddush, so this is a way not to violate by Rabbi Yamase. Wrap your chametz and throw it in a shed somewhere, and at least in Atari, you won't get by Rabbi Yamase, according to the Ritva. Okay, just very, very briefly, I know it's a little bit late, so I don't want to take too much of the time, but if Yosef asked me to talk a little bit about the boys, I jotted down some notes and can't really find them, but see, let's take a second. I wrote something down, but here it is. Okay, this is dedicated to both to all the chayalim. Okay, the two boys who fell, obviously, amongst all the chayalim and all the suffering that we had, not just the chayalim that we continue to have. The two boys were Yakir Hexter, Hashem Yikom Damav, and Yair Schwartz, Hashem Yikom Damav. And what hits so hard on every chayal and every soldier that gets killed, and certainly we're not Mechalik Medam Ladam, Medin Ladin, but for our yeshiva, these were Basra Mipsarenu, because both of their fathers had learned in yeshiva, and both of the boys came to the yeshiva out of deep affiliation with yeshiva. There was a sense of heritage. This is my father's yeshiva, and this is a masara that I was raised on, and this is a masara I want to continue in my family. In many ways, and their friendship was a product of their time in yeshiva. They had been friends in high school in Chorev, and they came to the yeshiva, and so there was an ongoing sense of a very interesting twinning of two different types of families. David Schwartz, his father Yair, lives in Efrat, and they're a classic Israeli family, classic, you know, when you imagine the classic Hesder family, you walk into the house, you feel the product of the Hesder world over the last 40, 50 years. And Yakir Hexter's father, Josh Hexter, made Aliyah from St. Louis. And the yeshiva has been, I think, successful in promoting over the past years, 50, 60 years, almost 60 years now, both of these avenues of growth in Am Yisrael. On the one hand, it's been fueling and powering the Hesder movement, along with all the other Hesder yeshivas, obviously. But also, and this is something which a lot of people in this room can deeply identify with, it's been instrumental in serving as a springboard for Aliyah. I mean, there are probably close, I think, to 1,300, 1,400 alumni who have made Aliyah. And I don't know how many of us, I know myself, I wouldn't have been capable of making Aliyah. Has it introduced me, it acculturated me, it served literally as a springboard when I came in 1993. My wife and I decided I didn't have a job in yeshiva. Alon Shavuot was my base, and I lived in Alon Shavuot. I was in the Kollel, and I said, we'll figure it out from there. But this is a place that I know people, and these are the people that... So this whole event of their being killed was very much taking a gut punch to the yeshiva and pulling a etzem etzemai basam mibsari from the yeshiva. And it made me think, I'm sure other people as well. I remember Avamital always told us, whenever we came to thank him at the end of our time in yeshiva, and he had a way of being very rambunctious, intentionally rambunctious. He wanted you to think about things out of the box. So when you came to him and said a platitude, you know, he would reject the platitude. He had his finger say, shtiyot, shtiyot, shtiyot. I remember that was his platitude rejecting finger. Like, I remember hearing once tell us, you know how people say, just a lot of adults in the room, they'll appreciate how Avamital was such a non-conventional thinker. But not trying to be rebellious. It's trying to give us a fresh view on old, stale ideas. So you know how people say, at first I wanted to change the world, and then that proved too difficult, so I withdrew and tried to change my family. That became even more difficult, so I contracted and just tried to focus on myself. He's saying, shtayat, shtayat, lanachan, lanachan. He said, first people try to change themselves. Then when that's too hard, they try to change their family. And when that's too hard, they try to change the world. Gerecht, right? That's what happened. You have all these people who change the world, and you know, focus on yourself first. Don't try to change everyone around you. So he'd always teach us how to see things we call Ipcha Mistapra. We always see things as a, remember once they wanted to start a Mormon missionary in Givat Mordechai. Long, long time ago. So the entire community raised up in arms and defended, and they had protest meetings and signatures to protest. So they came to Rav Migdal. He wasn't the Rav of the community. He was a balabas. He liked being a balabas. But they came. He was a respected member. So they came with the that summa that he should say against the Mormons. So he kicked them out of the house. So get out of the house. Like very, very Rav Migdal. I can't tell you how many times Rav Migdal kicked me out of his office. I knew I'd go back the next day and get what I needed, but like he screamed me out. He's very... eruptive almost, like he felt deeply with his ideas, and when he crossed his ideas, and out of love, but he was screaming out of the office. So he screamed out of the room. So I heard this from his son, Rav Yoel. He went over and he said, Abba, like they're going to open a missionary. How can you not oppose it? He said, I know these Mormons. They're going to open a missionary somewhere. If it's not here, it's going to be in Haifa. If not in Haifa, in Tel Aviv. If not in Tel Aviv, Petach Tikva. They should open it here and give up Mordechai. The Chevroners, the Yeshiva Bachram and Chevron, they'll eat them for breakfast. These Chevroners, they're sharks. They don't think anything. And Faradik in 2 weeks, Sarver Bato. Kachaya, they opened it and give up Mordechai. The Chevroners tore them to shreds. And that was it. No more Mormons, at least for that period. So, Rav Amital, whenever we came over and said, Rebbe, I want to thank you, you know, this forced thank you. You come over at the end of your time. You're an 18-year-old boy. You're just platituding. Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Rav Amital would raise his finger and say, don't thank me now. Come back in 15 years and thank me then. Because you don't fully appreciate what we gave you in yeshiva until you start to grow and apply the values. And that was just a way of showing us he loved us. Don't thank us now. And I thought about those moments because Rav Amital, in many ways, having experienced this terrible, terrible loss in 1973, when the yeshiva was just getting started and there were 8 boys who were killed in the Yom Kippur War, and it's impossible to even imagine, you know, the magnitude of what we're suffering now compared to the Yom Kippur War on so many levels. But he really took it very, very deeply. At some point, he left the yeshiva. He gave the keys to Rav Aaron and said, you run the yeshiva. And in a moment of authenticity, he wasn't walking away from responsibility. He felt the shchol and he felt the sadness. And he felt it so deeply on in his neshama that as an authentic person, he realized he couldn't continue. And he gave it over to Rav Lichtenstein. And then he spoke to us about his recovery and how that affected him. And I feel as if he prepared us, sadly, in some ways. He gave us a language to process, in the yeshiva, to process what we're experiencing. I remember him telling us that he doesn't know why he was chosen the first person in 2,000 years since Rabbi Akiva to be teaching Torah to warriors, to be teaching Torah to people who are fighting and defending our people. And we don't always have that historical perspective. This is a new problem. We've renewed a tradition. We haven't been soldier scholars in 2,000 years. And now, Baruch Hashem, we have the immense, immense privilege to teach boys who are defending our people, defending our land, defending... And like every other schus in life, it comes with responsibility, and it comes with a price, and it comes with obligation. And just that perspective to know that we are pioneering or recovering a lost tradition, and that tradition is not going to come easy, unfortunately, and that we have to pay a price for that. And of course, not to ever assume that our price as much as the families are. And what part of Rav Amital told us, and I've seen it, and I have to be very, very careful. I've seen a lot of people, I call it tragedy appropriation, where people are suffering tragedies and others' personalities and public figures adopt the tragedy. It becomes their tragedy, and they make posts about it, and they write about it. And you have to be very, very delicate on two fronts. First of all, it's not your tragedy. It's the tragedy of parents who are sitting at Tzibrachin. And when people come in and take control of the tragedy and start talking about the tragedy as if they're the address, it just feels very off. There are people who are facing life-altering situations, the ability to put yourself in their place, not to draw from their experience and then use it to promote or to project. And second of all, to be able to identify with suffering and not to run away to ideology. Sometimes I'm at these shivas and Rabbanim come in and they just start spouting off, Mashiach is coming and your son is a malach and he's in Shemayim, and just, that's not where the parents are. Parents are crying. The parents are in the darkest depths of, and just to be able to put yourself in their place without the ideology, without trying to sugarcoat or sanitize. These are some of the ideas that we saw in Rav Amital. He just lived, he would go every year to the Askarot of 8 Talmidim, and it was all around Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is a very busy time. You know what it's like between Yom Kippur and Sukkot. Go to every single Askara, and he was there for the... Maybe he told us one story that he came. Benny Ram was one of the boys who died in Yom Kippur, a very, very legendary personality. And Benny Ram died in the war, and he came like a year or two later to an Askara for Benny and another soldier. And he walked into wherever was holding Petah Tikva, and there were supposed to be four speeches. He and another person were supposed to speak about his Talmud Benny, and the other person also. And then there were two people who were supposed to speak about the other soldier. And as they were arriving, they got word that one of the personalities meant to speak about the other soldier couldn't make it, traffic, whatever. So now it would be two people speaking about Benny Ram and one person speaking about the other soldier. So the first person to speak about Benny Ram gave up and gave a beautiful, beautiful hesped for Benny. And then the Rav, who was speaking about the other soldier, was 1111, got up and gave just like a general Dvar Torah about, you know, Chayalim. So here Rav Hamital was facing, he's going to get up and speak about Benny Ram, his Talmud, and the other family is going to feel tzibrachin, like no one's talking about their kid. So as that person is speaking about the other soldier, giving just a regular Dvar Torah, Rav Hamital made his way through the audience and collected stories about a Chayal that he never knew. And he got up and he gave a hesped about that Chayal, and he didn't talk about his Talmud. And supposedly, like, Benny Brown's parents came over to him and, like, realized the godlessness they had just seen, the sensitivity. But again, if you're stuck in this ideological train ride, you know, you get up and you talk about Milchama, you talk about Mashiach Tzai, you talk about Gula, and you talk about, there's real people and real families and real suffering, and just sometimes insensitivity to that. That's Imonachi B'Tzara. Not to run away to how you interpret, and the Arachaim's Pshat, and the Kleyaka's Pshat, and this, just to be able to feel people's pain and live in their pain. I just feel I've lived with Rav Hamital the last couple months, and I'm just listening to his voice and trying, obviously it's different and not at that level, but just trying to follow some of the guidelines that he gave us. And now just something about this shul and how it relates to this day. Supposedly, these are stories that are hard to prove, but supposedly, Reb Chaim Volozhin started the first modern yeshiva in Volozhin. This is a famous, famous break. Right before Reb Chaim Volozhin started the yeshiva, yeshivas weren't institutions. It was a small little bate medrash. It was called the Kehillah Yeshiva. So what happened? You lived in a small town, and the Kehillah supported X amount of Talmidim to learn with the local Rav, and they gave them meager support, and there were 10 boys in the base medrash, maybe 15, 20, and then when you outstripped the local Rav, you went to the next town, and you learned by that Rav. But major yeshivas with dormitories and global yeshivas and boys, it didn't exist for a range of reasons. Monetarily, the spirit of Am Yisrael was sunken. There wasn't transportation, right? Volozhin was right around the time the transportation was starting to improve. So just everything was falling into place for the first modern yeshiva. And basically every yeshiva today is somehow or another a derivative of Volozhin yeshiva. We all go back to our common DNA. It starts in 1803 with Eitz Chaim yeshiva. So they started a yeshiva. And by the way, people feel like it like was, you know, fire on a prairie. Everyone took over. It really didn't. Like, the yeshiva world is still very much built in the old style. Mir started around 1820, but until like the late 1800s, early 1900s, it wasn't a mass movement. It was still Kehiladik yeshivas. So one of his peers, Rabbi Ephraim Zalman Margolis, he wrote the sefer called Mate Ephraim, which is a very important sefer for Yom Narayim. So Mate Ephraim is talking to Rabbi Chaim Volozhin, Ephraim Zalman Margolis, and he asked Rabbi Chaim, how come your yeshiva was so successful, and the yeshiva that I started didn't get anywhere? Interesting question. So Reb Chaim asked Reb Chaim Zalman, he said, what did you do the first day you opened your yeshiva? So Reb Chaim Zalman said, the first day we opened our yeshiva, we had a mesiba, we had dancing, we had a sudas mitzvah. So Reb Chaim said, you know, when we opened Volozhin, the first day we were gozer atanas. And everyone daven for siyata dishmaya. Because without a Kadosh Baruch Hu siyata dishmaya, nothing of human craftsmanship will survive, will succeed. So we daven for Siyat Dishmaya. I'm not discussing right now whether the mode for davening Siyat Dishmaya is fasting or celebrating. That's not the issue. Whenever you start a project, you have to enter the project, just like in Parshat Tzav, knowing that you're starting something great, knowing that you want it to be successful, and knowing that despite all your efforts, in the end, without Siyat Dishmaya, it won't be successful. When I look back at Yeshiva and its success over the last 60 years, I believe its Siyata Dishmaya, aside from everything else, was because it was built on the blood of Dam Kiddushim, and because it suffered Dam Kiddushim at such an early stage, which is so formative for the yeshiva. And in the modern era, where we're being Moser Nefesh for Am Yisrael, for Eretz Yisrael, we're not Ketanim, we're Kedolim, right? You don't gauge. We don't paski Neskatnu Hadaros when it comes to Gevurah. We paski Neskatnu Hadaros when it comes to the Masara. The closer you are to Har Sinai, the more lucid your transmission. The further you are from Har Sinai, the more breaks there are in transmission. So Atana has to defer, Mara defers to Atana. But Gevurah is not a question of transmission. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts strong neshamas into particular generations. And this enfeebling myth that we're all nothing and we're all midges and everyone wants to be tzaddikim, it's not true and it's not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to think. And so the Mesiras Nefesh that we have shown over the last 75 years, and in particular, the Mesiras Nefesh in this area. Okay, it's all, we know, I know the municipality of Ephrat is different municipality, of course. But this is all one area. And in 1947 and 1948, there was Dam Kedoshim that was spilled in order to protect not just Gush Etzion, but to protect the heartland of Eretz Yisrael. If not for Gush in the south and Tzfat in the north, there wouldn't have been a country. There are heroism both in Tzfat and Gush and like palindromes. Like same thing happened in Tzfat, happened in Gush. The stories are different, but the Mesiras Nefesh is the same. And the fact that the yeshiva was built, Lezecher, those people who were most in image of Kiddush Hashem, and during its infancy, it went through that same experience, I feel counts in Shemayim. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu realized this is not a yeshiva, just to learn this is a yeshiva that represents something a little bit larger about our people. So hopefully, now that you're starting the shul in Gush and in our area, that whole orientation, what do we want to accomplish? And to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they'll be successful. So this is a nice day to remind ourselves that in everything, Mesiras Nefesh doesn't mean dying on Kiddush Hashem. Mesiras Nefesh means living on Kiddush Hashem, being Mosu Nefesh for something, living for something more important than yourself, and sacrificing your time, your comfort, whatever you sacrifice. We don't have a death wish. Mesiras Nefesh on Kiddush Hashem is just to prove that we care about HaKadosh Baruch Hu more than ourselves. So if push comes to shove, we're Mosu Nefesh, because that proves it. If you weren't willing to, then it would be a pircha. But you're not really being Mosu Nefesh HaKadosh Hashem. Mosu Nefesh HaKadosh Hashem, we hope HaKadosh HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'nekdashi b'soch b'nei, so there's no mention of death. Pesukim v'kadosh Hashem, don't mention death. V'nekdash b'soch b'nei Yisrael. So hopefully Mesiras Nefesh in this community, led by, of course, Shlomo and all of his, in your model and your example for everyone. Be'ezus Hashem, Hashem should give a bracha. V'inam Hashem alakeinu aleinu. And then, Be'ezus Hashem, we shouldn't suffer any more tragedy, any more hardship. And Amisa.